call this meeting in the House Fisheries Committee to order. It is 5:07 p.m. on Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Present, we're a little skinny tonight. We have Representative Miller and myself, Representative Chair Steve Thompson. Today's committee meeting, we'll be receiving an overview from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, ASME. This is a reminder, everybody please turn off your cell phones. Just putting the silence in this room doesn't work because that still interferes with the system. This is the one room where it vibrate picks up and shuts down the whole system. With us today we have Ray Ryuta.
Ryuta,
I got it right. Executive Director of Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Mr. Ryuta, if you'd please put yourself on the record and we will receive your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Ray Ryuta. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And with me today, I have our Communications Director, Mr. Tyson Fick, and also one of our board members, Mr. Bruce Wallace. I'd like to give you an overview of ASME, what we've been up to, what we're doing, our marketing strategies, highlight a couple of issues, and then I do have some budget numbers in the end. I realize this is in the budget committee, but I can happy to go through those if time permits. First off, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has been around for well over 30 years. It's a public-private partnership between the state of Alaska and the industry, and our primary mission is marketing, as is in our title. And I'd just like to start with a little ditty here that comes from courtesy of Tyson Fick's two young children, because it kind of says what we're all about. And if I may read this with your permission,
yes,
Mr. Chairman,
ahead.
I will. It says, "The codfish lays 10,000 eggs, the homely hen lays one. The codfish never cackles to tell you what she's done. And so we scorn the codfish while the humble hen we prize, which only goes to show you that it pays to advertise."
Well done.
Okay, the Alaska seafood industry is big business in Alaska. We like to say that for the most part, we pay our own way. We have a lot of taxes that are directly assessed on the industry, and some that are self-assessed. For example, ASME's budget is supported on a half a percent marketing self-assessment by the industry on the ex-vessel price of fish. That's basically the price the processors pay to our fishermen. That money generates about half of our base income in the state. Been graciously providing the other half on a one-to-one match with the industry funds. We use those to leverage what's called marketing access program funds to support our international marketing efforts overseas. And so we basically run three sources: industry funds, state funds, and federal marketing dollars. And the numbers are in the back of the presentation. I'll jump to those. You can see through the points on the slide here that the industry generates well over $4.6 billion in economic value. And this was in 2009. That was the last time one of these studies was completed. It's the major employer in the state and contributes over $1.45 billion in labor and income. Alaska is the dominant seafood producer in the United States. We produce over half of the United States seafood that goes to market. And you can see the numbers are 1.9 million metric tons worth over $1.7 billion at X Vessel. We had a great season just completing up with about 170 million fish harvested in Alaska, which is the 11th highest number since statehood. We have consistently, in the last several decades, been harvesting at very high and sustainable levels. This just gives you a real graphical picture of where the seafood goes and how we fit in relationship to other proteins. We're a center-of-the-plate protein competitor with beef, pork, and chicken. You can see that only about 16 pounds of seafood is consumed per capita in the United States. If we could kick that up a little bit, we would enjoy better prices and people would be a lot more healthy than they are. Salmon production on the lower left-hand chart there shows that Alaska produces about 90% of U.S. salmon. But in the global market, we only produce about 12%. A lot of that is aquaculture, farm fish from Chile and Norway and Canada and other places. And also we compete with the wild fish from Russia and Japan, salmon from Russia and Japan. In the global market, as I mentioned earlier, we produce over half of the seafood in the United States, but we're only 2% of the total global market. When you look at all the seafood that's harvested around the world, which is why we really have to take and market our products to command a better price. We do not set the price in the marketplace as a commodity. We have to separate ourselves and become a marketing entity in order to command a better price in the marketplace than the average commodity price that would go out there. This is a graphic that shows you where the different species of Alaska seafood fall based on our 2010 data. Pollock is in the red there on the left-hand side is 43% of the volume, but only 21% of the value. Salmon, by contrast, is 18% of the volume and 35% by value. And then you can see how some of the other really high-value fish show up there. You know, black cod, 1%, 6% of the value. Shellfish, 2%, 14% of the value. And then there's and halibut, 1% and 11% of the value. So there's quite a discrepancy between volume and value in the various products that we harvest up here. Some of that's separated by marketing and desire. Others just by products that are used more of ingredients as opposed to sold on their own. Pollock is primarily an ingredient in many value-added things. Salmon and halibut pretty well stand on their own in many places. The state, we have quite an impact in the fishing industry on rural communities. Many of our fishing locations are well out in coastal Alaska and very remote locations. In many cases, they're the only cash infusion in the local economies. Because of the economy of scale of the processing facilities, they help reduce the cost of shipping and utilities and provide much of the infrastructure, particularly to non-road communities. I've heard several times Mr. Jim Jansen state that if it wasn't for the backhaul of seafood, freight rates in Alaska would generally be about 10% higher than they are right now. So the seafood we send out of the state helps everybody in Alaska by reducing our overall cost of transportation. So what is Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute? Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're a public-private corporation, a partnership between the state and the industry. Our board is appointed by the governor. There's five processors and two commercial harvesters, and our job is to market Alaska seafood. This is our mission statement. We're really focused on trying to increase the economic value of the Alaska seafood resource through the following items listed on the slide here. More recently, we've been really working hard on trying to maintain market access, and I'll come back to that in a minute because it's one of the issues that's starting to become a problem with some of the certification programs in the world today. These are the members of our board. What you see here is a picture of our most recent customer advisory panel meeting in Cordova. We have a customer advisory panel that's made up of eight of our largest customers representing such entities as Safeway, Darden's, you know, think Red Lobster and those kind of folks, Cisco, Kaboom Foods from Japan, Bird's Eye Igloo from the Europe, and a number of other companies that that advise our board on an every year at an annual meeting on how best to approach the marketplace, things that are working, things that aren't working. So it's a really good customer-driven approach, and I think it works out very well. It's been very valuable to us over the last several years since we started that. And as you can see, the names of the board members are listed up there for you. This comes out of our statute. Basically, we have to promote all Alaska product generically from the state. We are not allowed to promote an individual brand. We're not allowed to promote an individual region. And we're not allowed to promote products that don't come from Alaska. I put up the Alaska Constitution, Article 8, Section 4, talks about sustained yield. That is the basis for our sustainability claim for Alaska seafood products. We live and breathe what the Constitution says and the way we manage our fisheries, and it's been a very good selling point for us, particularly as the sustainability movement has gathered ground. This is what customers are saying about the descriptors when they think about Alaska. This comes from some research done just several years ago. Fresh, tastes great, high quality, natural. These are all things that we use in the marketplace to get people's interest and to associate with our product and to separate us from the run-of-the-mill product. We are the second most commonly branded item in the U.S. restaurant menus, beat out only by Black Angus beef this year. So we're still we still hold second. It kind of rotates between Black Angus and Oreo cookies and a few other odds and ends up and down depending on what's going on. But we're consistently in that top one or two, or top two or three place. We've recently shifted our target audience from what was originally focused primarily on the boomer generation, 45 to 54, college educated, upper incomes. We've added Gen Y, which is basically the next generation of seafood consumers. And we're focused a lot of our attention now on college and universities. We've also expanded our use of social media, a media that's used heavily by Gen Y, and focused on things that both boomers and Gen Y tend to see as important to them. And then you can see just from some of the bullets up there, you know, there are certain things that are very strong into where they get their information, how environmentally sensitive they are, and how much they prefer Alaska salmon to just the run-of-the-mill average stuff. We have six programs within ASME. Those are listed here: Retail Food Service International, Technical Consumer Relations, and Global Food Aid. We're guided by a committee. Each one of those has its own committee, with the exception of the Global Food Aid, which is part of the actually directly worked by the board. We have approximately 60 members from all across the state and across the industry, representing their constituency, you know, the different species and the different processing sectors, to really provide good input from the folks that sell the fish, the folks that harvest the fish, the folks that process the fish, on how we should go to market. In addition, on our board, we have four ex officio members, two from the administration, one from the House, and one from the Senate. In the domestic retail marketing program, we focus on retailers across the United States through in-store promotions, a lot of consumer advertising, a lot of trade relations, and a lot of trade advertising. These are a couple of types of things we do. We do a lot of partnering with groups like Constellation Wines. We do a little co-branding. We co-brand with Alaska Brewing Company an awful lot. We've done a lot of work with them. We do a lot of plated shots for the entire industry to use and our customers, so that if you want to do a cookbook or a thing in your store, you can do that. And then we help with case setting. And the center part there is a Winn-Dixie case that we help set up, and we provide in-ice signs, ice picks, different types of things that a customer would use in order to market at the point of sale. We also partner with stores. A lot of our stuff is tailored 250 store. What you see on the left there is a Giant Eagle ad. That was a big Iron Man, which is one of those big stands that sits in the store at the end, you know, the end of the aisle, showing, talking about Alaska's October as Seafood Month. On the right is a website which we have helped to work with Lund's, Byerly's, and HEB, two different stores, where we helped them develop a website landing page that they use as part of their social and digital media programs, where we get our messaging in there, and we help them craft some of the stuff. We provide them a lot of the photography, and then they draw people into their stores and get to their social media outlets, their regular customers that they have on their list, which very, very well. The center thing is another type of a piece that we write. It's kind of like an advertorial that we'll put in a trade magazine. Like if you go to Costco or Safeway or Fred Meyer's, they all have their little magazines. Well, you'll frequently see an insert in there from us with something like that, telling a story about a different part of Alaska seafood. In the food service side, this is where we work with restaurants, colleges and universities, and broadline distributors and chefs networks. We really focus on the chefs a lot because they basically lead the menuing. We have a tremendous partnership with the Culinary Institute of America. We've been working with them both at Hyde Park and Greystone for years. And one of the things we've introduced into the chef's world is the idea that frozen seafood is actually a good thing. It doesn't always have to be, quote, fresh. And we've seen some real changes in that viewpoint since we've been working on them. What you see here is an ad that's been done by Captain D's, which is a big restaurant chain. The thing on the right that says the final cut is actually at Yale University, where we sponsored an Iron Chef contest. And this was very well received. The campus got into it. These are the type of things that they get the next generation of seafood eaters excited about Alaska seafood. Again, in the seafood food service side, this on the left where it says Wild Finland is a broadline distributor. Harbor Banks is a major broadliner, and these are the types of things that we do to get their sales force excited. On the right is an advertorial you'll see many times in a newspaper in the food section, where the food editor will write a whole article about Alaska, or appear to have written a whole article about Alaska. A lot of this comes right off our pre-written advertorials that they're able to just pull and put right in. And then, of course, we do things like at the bottom with Gordon Food Service, where there's a little rebate on purchases of Alaska seafood. Again, another thing on campus, the next slide is at UMass, which is where we got everybody fired up to do the longest, the world's longest sushi roll. That's sushi there. That's actually pollock that they're making sushi out of. So these are things that just, they're really not that expensive, but they get people excited and they get people understanding that there's something special about Alaska seafood. In the international markets, we have quite a broad reach. As I mentioned at the beginning, we use market access funds through the Foreign Ag Service, the Agriculture Service, part of USDA. These funds are matched on a little over a one-to-one basis, and they allow us to conduct marketing activities in Japan, the European Union, and China. We've recently added a contractor in Brazil. We see tremendous potential in the Brazilian market for Alaska seafood. And our international director is currently in Dubai at a trade show in Dubai right now. So we reach out, testing new markets, seeing what the possibilities are out there. We're limited only by the amount of money we have to reach out like everybody. But we think we've got the key markets pretty well hit, particularly with adding Brazil into them. These are just some pictures of various activities around the world. Again, some various ads, the left from Japan, I believe the one in the middle is from Spain, and of course the one on the right is from Germany. We also work very closely with the U.S. Food Aid program on Global Food Aid. And we did a presentation, Mr. Bruce Schachter did one along with his staff to your group a few days ago, so I won't dwell into that in great detail, other than to say it's a great outlet for what started out as a great outlet for canned salmon has become a very popular nutrition program for the food aid program, and now we're expanding it from canned salmon to the next step, trying to find the same type of good markets for herring. And the bottom line with the food aid program is today's food aid recipients are tomorrow's customers. A lot of countries around the world started out as food aid recipients are now buying our products regularly. We also have a seafood technical program that works across the industry to be the resource for them on food safety, quality, nutrition, food labeling, environmental issues. Even goes so far as to work with folks like Alaska Airlines on cargo handling and how to get the product to market. So we provide guides from the point of harvest all the way through to the end user, and the folks that actually put the product in the case or serve it to your table are all somewhere touched through the technical program. Sustainability has really become a big issue and has consumed most of the technical program's time over the last few years because it's become such a requirement to go to market. We have a great story to tell, probably one of the best, if not the best, in the world, but it's become a very big issue out there. We also have a communications program. I mentioned Mr. Tyson Fecky's here. He works across newspapers with various groups to try to get our story out. We certainly work in state to make sure that the people that support ASME understand who we are and what we're doing and what's available to them. Because there's a lot of folks who are direct marketers or who market through a small store or who run a lodge somewhere, who have a use for some of our recipe cards, some of our point of sales materials. That's available to everybody in the industry equally, whether they're the largest processor or whether they're someone who's just selling their catch off the back of their boat. And in order for people to understand that, we've got to do some outreach to them so they know what we're doing and what's available. These are just some of the collateral materials that we develop. We do a lot with cookbooks and recipe development. We have little cards. We've got fancy cookbooks. We focus on things like catering has been the latest thing that we focused on. But there's quite a few of these out there, all available on our website. And if there's any interest for any of you, we'd be happy to provide an assortment for the committee to look through and enjoy at some point. More collateral materials. We do training, as I say. We moved into CDs. Seafood University is something that we brought online now, where you can actually go on and take a course on how to about Alaska seafood. Is something we developed that was the upshot of a program that we started with Kroger's about 5 or 6 years ago. And what was happening was we were going down to Kroger's and we were spending a week or 2 weeks with two of our people spending every day, all day, teaching their different sales teams about Alaska seafood, and we couldn't become a part of their permanent campus. Obviously, we have other things to do, so we put this online. We started out CD, and then as we moved forward, we put it online, and this has now been incorporated into the training programs for a lot of major retail chains. Use this in some of our own companies when they get a new person that comes into the seafood business for the first time. They send them to take Seafood U101, and this just kind of lays out all the good things about Alaska seafood, and it's self-paced, and you get a certificate at the end after you answer all the questions. So you have to prove that you passed the course to get the certificate. This is just a snapshot of the Boston Seafood Show. We partnered with Reman Yos and used her artwork extensively. It's been a great hit at the Boston Show. And it's been a great partnership for us, and it's a chance to highlight a great Alaska artist and also decorate a booth really well. You can see the size of that particular show. It's big. It's coming up on the 10th through the 13th of March. This is a European seafood show, and you saw the picture of Boston. Well, European seafood show is orders of magnitude bigger than that. It's the biggest seafood show in the world. You can see the numbers here. Last year, we had 21 companies exhibiting at the Alaska Pavilion, which is equal in size to the whole rest of the U.S. Pavilion. We're definitely the big big dog at the U.S. side, but we're really small because we're going head-to-head with China and Canada and Norway and Brazil and Spain and France. It's a real challenge to get our message across. But we're doing quite well. As you can see, we had over $50 million in on-site sales last year and $634 million in projected sales as a result of that one show. So that's a good return on our investment. We spend about $250,000 on that, and all the companies also spend going over there. So it's a good return, and it's definitely a place where we make a lot of business. We also do things like Confish and Kodiak to make sure people know what's available. There's Hofex, which is a restaurant show in Hong Kong. Rui in Hamburg on the lower right-hand side, another restaurant and bar show in Germany. And then Polefish in Gdansk, Poland. And most recently, I think we did one in, we've been to Seafood Moscow on several occasions because Eastern Europe is becoming a better and better market for some of our product, particularly roe product. We've really branched out into social media over the last few years. We have a very robust website that has incredible amounts of detail and information on it. We've also developed several what you call microsites to kind of do more of the consumer market approach, where we have things like a taco site, where people come to look at fish tacos and things like that. All very, very good. We've moved into Facebook. We've done a little dabbling in Twitter and a thing called Tumblr. We've got a number of things up on YouTube. And we're just continuing to expand that medium because it's just so important to get the message across, particularly to Gen Y and other people, not just in the U.S., but all around the globe. This is the wave of the future, and we see great potential here to carry our message out. So what are some of our recent challenges? That kind of summarizes what we do. The world certainly has challenges. There's price resistance because we've done a good job of getting our price up. There's a growth in farm salmon as Chile has come back from their ISA problems a few years ago, and is pumping a lot of product out into the marketplace. Certainly currency fluctuations, the world economic situation, all those are challenges. One of the things that we're really faced with right now, though, is the significant number of attacks that have come our way since the Alaska salmon producers decided they would withdraw from the MSC certification process in January 2012. Alaska had been with MSC for over a decade. The Marine Stewardship Council is a certification body based in London that certifies seafood around the world as sustainable. After several years, the industry basically felt that it would be better to refocus their efforts on other things rather than to continue with the recertification, which was coming up on its fifth year certification. 2 years ago, they asked ASME to provide an alternative. We've done that. It's a good alternative. It's been pretty well established by the certifying body. It goes to the FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries Management. It's based directly on that. It's certified to ISO 65 standards, which are the toughest certification standards in the world. However, there's been quite a pushback by both the MSC and a number of their sponsors since we brought that program to market. Claiming it's not equivalent, it's not worthy, it's a step backwards for the sustainability movement and a lot of other things. Here's one statement. There are many out there, but this is what Mr. Mike Sutton, from former founder of the MSC, had to say. And you can read the threats on the top there that we're going to regret this. There's all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a concentrated effort seems to be out there to discredit our hatchery program, which is a model for world hatcheries anywhere. As a matter of fact, the hatcheries that are being developed in Russia are based in part, and on our hatchery system, which is something the NGOs who are helping establish those have supported. And then the last one, the last comment there speaks to the depth at which some of these organizations reach. I mean, you can see that in California, this guy was actually so influential that he actually got the state to write into their law that the only people that could certify you as sustainable is the MSC. That's I think troubling to anybody. Certainly, I would hope to you as a legislature that would be troubling. So, what is this all about? What are the concerns? Well, one of them is maintaining market access. As the MSC has evolved, they've become in many places a must-have to go to market. This is particularly true in Germany, to some degree in the UK where they're based. At some stores around the United States who have said they will only source seafood from sustainable, wild seafood from sustainably managed fisheries that are certified by the MSC or the equivalent, or in some cases just certified by the MSC. This creates what we view as a long-term problem because the MSC is heavily influenced by their funders, which are the World Wildlife Fund and other NGO organizations. It tends to commoditize as more and more folks come on board. It tends to commoditize the fishery into MSC fish, and of course we spend a lot of time separating ourselves as a brand, and we don't want to be part of the MSC world of fish. And there have been a lot of associated costs with the MSC, but the key is that it's a pay-to-play eco logo. If you want to be sustainable, you have to pay for the privilege of going to market. But let me turn back to the concern we have with the NGO influence. This is what, in our view, should be the role of the NGO. As you know, we have a very open and robust fisheries management process and governance process for Alaska, both at the state and the federal levels. And that's on the flow chart on your left. It has all the legal mandates. It has the FAO guidance is there. All of our fisheries fully comply with the FAO guidance. It has the competent authorities, all the stakeholders, and it is the place that the NGOs can, if they choose to, come and make their requests, their demands, their needs known. It's both at the North Pacific Council and it's at the Board of Fish. After the decisions come out of there, then they're imposed on the fishery. The fishermen then go about their business and either sell to a processor or they produce a product themselves and direct market it to the market. Well, in between seafood product and market now has been established the certification programs. That in itself isn't so bad, particularly for folks who have really badly managed fisheries, unlike ours. But when it becomes a requirement to go to market, and that's what we see starting to evolve, you must have this certification to go to market, then that gives the NGOs the ability to come back and influence fisheries governance in a way that it was never intended to be done. The intent for them is to be in the governance place where everybody else is, not to come back and say, if you don't comply with our demands or our certification program, you won't be able to sell your product. It's kind of a double-edged sword because in some parts of the world, the truth is the governance process is really bad, and that's the only place you can fix it. For us, it's become a problem because the standard is constantly changing. It's not enough to be in compliance with the FAO code. You have there's been changes that are imposed continually on well-managed fisheries that aren't necessarily imposed on lesser-managed fisheries, at least in the beginning. The biggest concern, though, that the industry has raised as they watch this process unfold, and it has to do with the MSC, but it would be anybody else that's a certification program that's solely driven by NGOs, is that it gives them the ability to stop fisheries from sending their product to market without having to participate in the governance process. If we're going to have worldwide certification on sustainability, that's really the responsibility of governments, and governments should take that responsibility to do so. And it's been done through the FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries. But complying with that isn't necessarily enough, because we get added requirements. That was the crux of the problem with the salmon industry decided to withdraw from the MSC. That bar was moving. There was a move to try to separate out hatchery fish from non-hatchery fish. Well, you know, trying to sort that is ridiculous. The hatchery program in Alaska is a perfectly good program. There's no scientific basis not to support it. If it becomes a problem and there's lots of research undergoing, then we as a state will take care of it. It's the law of the land. We have to manage that stuff appropriately. So it shouldn't be an issue. Dividing the state up into multiple components, which is where the next phase apparently was going, into different regions as opposed to one fishery. There's been a push by a number of NGOs to do that for many years. That's just not the way we manage the fishery up here, and to try to force that back on us through the marketplace is problematic. Those are the basic reasons that the salmon industry, or the major players in the salmon industry, said we just can't have that kind of interference in our fisheries management. So they've asked us to provide them with an alternative certification program. We think it is absolutely adequate, and it gets the job done. This is the bottom line on that. Is basically, this is an argument not about who has the best fisheries logos. It's not about who has the best marketing strategy, or even who has the best fish. It's who should manage our fish. And this is basically our view. I think the MSC has a role in the world, as do all these certification bodies, but at the point where they start to interfere with a single private entity who has their own private standard, to give them the sole authority to decide who can sell seafood to the public and who cannot is problematic in the view of the industry. And that's why we're providing an alternative, so that there's some competition in the marketplace and we don't end up in a situation where we have one group that can control access to the market. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes that part. I can move to the budget items if you'd like, or stop and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the comments on the MSC. Are there other states or countries or nations that are removing themselves from the MSC labeling system?
Not right now. Some have never entered into it. The program that we're using as an alternative to the MSC is the one that's being used by Iceland right now. It's called Responsible Fisheries Management Certification. Long-winded term, but it's you got to kind of use that to get through to tie it to the FAO code. Canada is looking at using it, this same model for some of their, or the certification process for some of their fisheries. There are other countries that have expressed an interest in it, and a number of other states who are looking very closely at what we're doing as a potential alternative to the MSC.
Okay. I guess thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Canadian fishery, for instance, uses a lot of farmed fish and other things like that, and it sounds like they would have bounced before Alaska did. Is there a reason why they haven't yet?
To the chair, Representative Kawasaki, this is only for wild fish. There's a separate certification for farmed fish. So that is done differently than this only applies to wild capture fisheries. I'm sorry I didn't make that clear in the beginning. I should have.
And then just a follow-up, I don't really know what MSC stands for. I don't know if it's stamped on fish. I mean, I personally don't buy MSC fish. And so I guess as far as credibility goes, you know, if you've got a degree from Harvard, that people know Harvard, but if you get a degree from, you know, I don't know, University, or the what's the Phoenix Online, you know, that that's not a great, I mean, not maybe not as credible as a degree from Harvard. So, you know, is MSc the gold standard of labeling? Are there other that you could say are equally great? Are they very divergent? I guess, you know, we'd sort of want the best. But then, you know, it's a question as to what the best is.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, MSc is the best known certification program for wild capture fisheries. No question about that. I would never argue against it. And in many cases, they've done a lot of good. Our concern is that they become the sole gatekeeper to the market. That's a problem. What we have done in order to provide an option, what we think is a less costly option in that you don't have to pay local licensing fees, is we've gone back to the source of all the certification programs anyway, the FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries Management. That was generated, I believe, in 1995 through a series of actions on the part of over 70 nations who came together and developed this code. That is the basis for all certification programs. Now, the MSc has taken that many steps further and created their own standard. It is a very challenging standard in many places in how it's applied, but it also is a changing standard. And so it changes without going back to the agreed on code. It's whatever the MSc decides it should be.
Thanks.
Does that help with it?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a clarification, I'm much like my fellow across the hallway here. I don't know what MSc, just as a letter, what does that stand for?
Representative Miller, through the chair, MSc stands for Marine Stewardship Council. They're based in London, England.
All right, and also FAO?
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Okay. I need first. Because during your presentation, way back on page 11 in my document, I had made a note that I wanted to ask you more about the food labeling, and I assume this is one piece of that. And then, have we made any progress, or where are we in the world of either requiring or not requiring that farmed fish or genetically modified fish or whatever be labeled, and is that nationwide, statewide, universal? Where are we with all of that?
Through the chair, Representative Miller, that's a real mishmash right now, depending on where you are. I think in Alaska we require farm fish to be labeled. In other parts of the country, I don't believe it's required as a national standard. I'm not positive. Genetic is just coming on to the view. They're arguing over what that should be. Our research tells us very clearly people want to know where their fish come from, mm-hmm. period. And so whether it's farmed, whether it's wild, whether it's genetically modified, if it comes from Alaska, Russia, Canada, people want to know. I want to know where my fish comes from. Yeah. I think you probably do too. And that's what our research tells us. The customers want to know that.
And is that part of the discussion that's going on, at least with the GMO fish, that's going on in the U.S. Congress right now?
That is going on in the U.S. Congress right now, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki, another question?
Well, yeah, one more question. I scribbled down Germany. I didn't hear the entire comment, but did you say that some countries are not looking toward our fish, or maybe have changed because of this change, going away from the MSc? And are there other countries that do that similarly? And is it countrywide? Is it just certain buyers, certain distributors that would do that because of the labeling change?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, if I understand your question correctly, Germany is and the UK are really the strongholds for the MSc. Germany, because they're so heavily influenced by green environmental groups. Greenpeace has a very dominant role in Germany, very influential, and a lot of the retailers in Germany, in particular, require for seafood, wild capture seafood, the Marine Stewardship Council certification in order to go to market. They asked specifically for that type of fish, and they have said, some have been encouraged to say, since we made our announcement that this is going to be a problem, we may have to look elsewhere for our fish, we may have to buy our fish from Russia, go figure, we may have to get it in other places, but it's a problem for us in Germany, and we're going to make a concentrated effort to try to explain the rest of the story, if you will, that what we have is perfectly sustainable. It's very well managed. It is the gold standard, if you will, for how you manage salmon fisheries in the world. The UK, being the home of the MSC, of course, is very interested, but not quite so hard over as Germany. There's a little more acceptance there. When you get to the U.S. market, there's only a few retailers that really want the MSC as their standard. Most of them, quite frankly, don't want any eco logos on their boxes. They want what they call third-party certification, which means somebody comes in and certifies. It's like an auditor, really. Comes in and audits that you're complying with your own laws and rules, and you're complying with accepted international norms, which is the FAO Code of Conduct. And then they make that part of what they call a corporate social responsibility program. And a lot of these companies will then just say, well, it comes from Alaska. We know it comes from Alaska. We can prove it. You're good to go, and you're okay. And that's the way most U.S. food service and most U.S. retailers operate. And in truth, strictly from a sustainability standpoint, with the passage of the Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization, the requirement across the entire United States for sustainable seafood is there. So if you source from any U.S. fishery, you already have that by law, because we enforce it. You have sustainable fisheries, and you shouldn't technically need the third-party certification. However, it's become a go-to-market type of thing. It's a gate that continually gets put there. What we don't want to see happen in other parts of the world is what's happening in places like Germany, where they refuse to buy our products if we don't pay the MSC to certify them as sustainable. That's the concern, and then the moving bar that is out there. Those are the concerns that the industry has with the way this program is headed. What started out, if I could just go back, what started out is a really good balance between industry and in the environmental world to try to ensure that sustainable fisheries were, all the world's fisheries were sustainable, using market pressure has begun to tilt to the point where the industry doesn't feel they have a say at all in this process.
Any other questions? Want to go to the budget?
Certainly. These are just our basic budget slides. They come right out of our performance measures, and they show the value of key commercial species have been, with the exception of 2009, which was a year when we had a big pollock tack reduction, and we had some short salmon fisheries. You can see the numbers have been generally rising and pretty good. The double bar down below is the value of Alaska salmon, both ex vessel and first wholesale, which you can see is consistently rising over time. This is a really good news story. If you go back to where we were in 2002, with ex vessel, the blue bar on the lower graph, it was in the $150 million range. We're well up in excess of $600 million this year for, this is 2011, roughly 600 for 2010, but the 2011 numbers are even better. That's over $600 million in ex vessel value to the fishermen. And as the first wholesale goes up, there's a kind of a rising, not only a rising tide for ex vessel, it rises a little bit more dramatically than the first wholesale as the overhead costs get taken care of and those get bought down. But this has come about through a combination of investment incentives from the legislature. It's a direct result, quite frankly, of the Salmon Task Force, the Joint Legislature Industry Salmon Task Force of 2002. A lot of aggressive marketing, a lot of investment and changes in the industry, new product forms, moving from what was predominantly a can pack to a frozen fillet pack, which has given rise to the value of the canned products as well, and basically has given us a good solid salmon market across the board. And the reason we use that, I guess I know you guys have done a lot of new backup, but you know, you've done a lot of discussions up here about performance measures. And the first rule of performance measure is you can't use a performance measure that you don't control. Well, we don't control this, but it's how we're measured. Irrespective of anything else, if you ask anybody how ASME is doing, the first thing they will point to is the ex-vessel price of fish. And if that price is not going in a positive direction, we're measured as not doing a good job. And so we put it in here because regardless of what the performance measure gurus tell you, that's the measure that we get measured against. That's the measure Fish and Game gets measured against as well. This is just kind of goes to a little bit to our where we've done some of our spending. The top chart shows our consumer advertising and public relations. You can see as a result of some influx of monies when we were trying to raise the value from that 2002 low harvest, we had a number of very heavy ad campaigns. As the amount of money available to us diminished, we went more to a consumer PR method. There's if you don't have a certain amount of money, and our rule of thumb is if you don't have about $3.5 to $4 million of advertising money, you really can't go out and buy national TV. It just doesn't work. So you've got to go where you can do it. There's also the start of a change in focus a little bit into more social media aspects toward the tail end of that. So that's where we stand right now. Our the next graph down, the red and blue graph, shows the value and volume of our exports. You can see we're staying fairly steady. We export slightly over half, depending on the year and the cash, the monetary situations. We export about half of our products overseas. The U.S. market is growing, but it's still, we send a lot of product to Asia and China. This we use because this is the allocation of MAP funding. We compete against the Grain Council, the Beef Council, the Timber Council, the Wine Council, and just about every other council out there for our share of what is about a $200 million MAP allocation. As you can see from the gray bar on the bottom, each year it's getting more and more expensive to buy those federal dollars. We're very worried about this program going away in the future, like so many many federal programs, for obvious reasons, all of which you guys deal with every day up here, so I won't belabor that. If that goes away, then we'll have a serious gap in our international programs that we'll have to figure out how to deal with down the road.
Representing Kawasaki has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you say that is the MAP funding, the federal funding, is tied to how much general fund we attach to that specifically?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, it's tied to the amount of money we provide, correct? And we provide a combination of industry funds and general funds. You may have not been here when I described our funding sources, so maybe if with the chair's permission, I'll repeat that. We're funded by three basic sources. One is an industry self-assessment, which provides basically half of our core fund, and the other is state general funds, which is basically a one-to-one match for industry-provided funds. From that, we then leverage some of those dollars against the market access program. That's what MAP stands for. It's part of the Foreign Agriculture Service, which is under the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's part of the agricultural outreach for exports. So we use the combination of state and industry funds to buy or to match federal matching, get federal MAP dollars to do our overseas marketing. And we've been able to leverage on average $4.5 to $5 million a year over the last five to seven years on that.
And Mr. Chairman, and just as a follow-up, do we take advantage of every federal dollar that's out there? I mean, I know we've tried to do that with there's a small increment that they're going to try to propose on the Department of Education budget on the Council of the Arts, because they have a federal national endowment for the arts, pays a certain amount, and if we put in another 40, then we can get another 40, but that's capped. Mm-hmm. Is MAP funding also capped?
MAP funding is capped at $200 million. The amount that we contribute certainly has an impact on it. We don't expect that we can get much more than five. We're leveraging it as heavily as we can right now. Again, we're up against some pretty heavy folks who match sometimes at 2 and 3 to 1. So to expect to get much more than $5 million from MAP for ASME is probably unrealistic. But we're leveraging every dollar we can get, and we're using every tool we can to leverage more dollars out of that program.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And then this last chart, without having a lot of scales, but the relative lines are, I think, instructive here. It's the ex-vessel trend in seafood versus the increase in our budget. And you can see that as we went up in budgets, we were able to help tow some of the value up. As we went down, it came down with us, and as we started back up, we started to see it go back up a little bit. Now, in fairness, there's some monetary fluctuations in here, and there's an economic issue. Obviously, there's FY09 is in there, which is everybody's well aware of what happened around those years. So, the point here is that, you know, investing in a reasonable amount of advertising does help increase the overall value of the harvest to the state. This is the final, I think this is my final slide. This is our budget breakdown for FY13. It's basically the same top-line budget as we received in FY12. The difference being in that we're expecting to get about $500,000 less in federal MAP funds. We've made up for that mostly from industry funds and a little GF, and we've tried to do a good job of balancing that one-to-one match out between the state and the industry provided funds. FY12, that was an anomaly for us because there was a lot of adjustments that had to be made because of a funding shift in the way our funding was basically scored. And that required pushing our funding forward a year. It's fairly complicated, and I'm sure you don't want me to spend all night on it, but it worked out. So when it was all said and done, we didn't really get the one-to-one match last year, even though the money was available. This year, we're there with the one-to-one match, and we hope that that will continue in the future. We have the industry funds to cover this without any question. This is the rough breakdown. Again, you can see the numbers are pretty much the same. It just shows you where most of our money goes in personnel, travel. Travel is a big number for us. This is face-to-face meetings. It's go see Kroger's and Safeway when they want to meet. It's fly to Europe. It's go to these places. And if you're not there standing at their doorstep, they're not going to take an email from you. So you've got to sell your products face to face. And then those are the other items there. And that's end of my presentation, Mr. Chairman. I'll be happy to take any other questions that you might have.
So with the dropping of the MSC, it makes sure you're going to be a better salesman and get out there and do more, right?
We have a challenge. There's no question. There's a lot of pushback on that, Mr. Chairman.
With the pushback, you're going to have to get out there and spend some more money, it sounds like, possibly, than even what you planned on in FY13?
Possibly, yeah. I think there's going to be a challenge with FY13 going forward. We're going to be real challenged to get out and tell our story, particularly in Europe, where it's very expensive to do, and also in the domestic market. But Europe's going to be a real challenge for us. And it's going to be expensive getting our message out.
Looks to me like you've got a successful program that exceeds everybody's everywhere, and you just got to get out and sell that and make people understand that they, our standards are higher than MSC's. Mm-hmm. In my opinion.
We think that our MSC would certainly argue the reverse, but the bottom line is that they both accomplish the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really talking about demonstrating that we have sustainable seafood. It's kind of like Coke and Pepsi, you know. Coke is not Pepsi, and Pepsi is not Coke,
yeah.
But they both have cola, they both, you know, they both have caffeine, they both quench your thirst, they both go pretty well with pizza. Yeah. So, you know, if you're training, or salmon, yeah. So we would like to see the argument be, this is about sustainable seafood. You have a good program, they have a good program, what's the problem? The problem is, there's a definite push to there can be only one, and to us that's unacceptable.
What's the name of the new?
It's, we call it Responsible Fisheries Management because it's based on the FAO code.
And that Iceland's doing that.
Great. Matter of fact, we got the idea from Iceland.
From Iceland.
Yeah, we didn't create this on our own. We looked around and said, what alternatives are there? And when we looked out, we saw Iceland had what appeared to be a very good alternative, which has been very well accepted in the European market. That one has been accepted, yes.
Okay.
But they never signed up with the MSC, and our problem is that we did. And so now we're being, you know, there's a backlash for leaving. And to be fair, a lot of people have invested in the MSC logo and all that, including a lot of our own companies. So this is not a small decision on their part. They made it with... They made it with a lot of careful thought, and at the end of a long period of significant frustration. So that's where we are. But it's going to be a challenge. There's no question about it.
Sounds like it, but I'm sure you're going to succeed.
Thank you for your support, sir.
Questions? No others?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Jerry, thank you very much for your presentation. Do your cohorts have any comments they want to make, or... All right.
I guess just one, Mr. Chairman.
What was your name?
Jay's presented it.
Could you come to the microphone?
Yeah, please. And put your name on the record so we can get you properly recorded.
That may be a problem.
Give us your name and your affiliation so we can get it great.
My name is Bruce Wallace, and for this part of the talk, I'm a member of the ASME board.
Yeah.
I'm a commercial fisherman. I fish in Southeast Alaska. Ray presented this as the process is basically making the final decision, and in fact that triggered everything. But this has been a generally accepted response throughout the industry. Ray presented at UFA, United Fishermen of Alaska, without taking a formal vote, there was clear understanding of the problems, and the idea of having an NGO in that blocking position was not acceptable. The label, if it were just a question of labels, it would be a simple argument, but there's more to it than that, and that blocking issue, that ability to say of hatchery fish or of specific stock area assessment that's not acceptable or sustainable is just not something we can, as fishermen, agree to. So, I mean, it wasn't just the processors. I guess that's the basic
question to Mr. Wallace. Thank you for the input from the fisherman's side.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Iuda, thank you very much for your presentation. It was very informative, and I'm sure that we're going to be watching how the new labeling will work, and I'm sure it will. All right. That concludes our business for this evening, but our next Fisheries Committee meeting will be at 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 23rd. And at that meeting, we will be hearing House Bill 100, Ban on Cultivation of Genetically Modified Fish, and H.A.R. 10, which is Ocean Acidification Research. The time is now 6:10 p.m., and there being no further business, I adjourn today's Fisheries House Special Committee on Fisheries.